Well, first I'd like to thank the symposium organizers for inviting me to this session. It's a real honor to be here and speak at a session in honor to honor B.L.'s long and illustrious career. And I'd also like to point out that a lot of the research I'm discussing today is a result of collaboration with a lot of other people, and some of their names are shown there. Also, I thought I had longer to give this talk, so I'm going to apologize in advance. I'm going to give it a little bit faster than I'd intended. I think most of you have seen this about 4 million times. Several hundred atmospheric physicists and climatologists research have demonstrated that the 21st century will see significant global warming. And one of my colleagues and his students, Dave Gutzler at the University of New Mexico, has utilized this research along with the simulation of the Palmer Drought Severity Index and soil temperatures to demonstrate that this global warming will result essentially in literally persistent drought that will be caused by the equivalent of the 1950s drought. In the 21st century, that drought will be such that landscapes of this region will never recover from that drought because of global warming. What will the impacts of such global warming be on the landscapes of this region? Well, we can get an insight into this by looking at Pinyon. Studies by Brashears and his colleagues demonstrate that in many areas, Pinyon was virtually extirpated as a result of the last significant drought in this area that occurred in 1999 to 2004. So how will these predicted climate changes influence the vegetation mantled landscapes of these regions, and how can studies of soil formation of these landscapes help answer that question? But first, what conceptual model for soil profile development should we use in this research? Well, one model to consider would be I call it the canonical soil development model. Let there be parent material. Vegetation colonizes the surface, the A horizon forms. Eventually, the subsurface horizons form. On stable surfaces, these are time-dependent processes. The soil horizons develop below, vertically, that stable surface and produce a canonical vertical sequence described by Dokachev in the 19th century. One increasingly popular approach to the study of soils and associated hill slopes and biotic communities that utilizes what is essentially this model is referred to as soil production. In a recent paper by Humphreys and Wilkinson, they inform us that this model is essentially superior to that has been used in previous soil geomorphic studies, and we ought to be using it. Well, what's the basic idea behind this model? Well, it's really kind of been described in a recent popular textbook by a geomorphologist who's adopted it, fascinatingly enough, called Dirt. And basically the idea is that on slopes, the thickness of hill slope soils will simply reflect the balance of soil erosion and the weathering rocks that produces soil. The theoretical framework for this approach has been provided by Arjun Heimsath in a paper in Nature published in 1997, but essentially the approach is based on the work of G.K. Gilbert in the 19th century that proposed that sediment flux is proportional to slope. When you combine that equation with the differential equation that describes the conservation of mass for a column of soil on a slope, you get an equation that describes the rate of soil production, or DEDT, as a function of both soil thickness and soil curvature. Importantly, this process requires steady state. Can this approach be applied to the study of soil mantle vegetation slopes of the Southwest? Well, first I'd like to consider another model for soil development in dryland settings. And the story begins with studies of desert soils and desert pavements. How do they form? Virtually all geomorphologists and soil scientists throughout much of the 20th century thought pavements formed initially by deflation or by other surface processes that ultimately resulted in loss of material in the formation of desert pavement. After the pavement forms by this process, soils form according to the canonical model below the pavement. Is this how they form? My colleague Steve Wells and I, and along with our graduate students, studied soils on volcanic flow surfaces and pavements of the Sima volcanic field. Those studies show that accretionary soils are actually forming on these pavements, that it literally lifts the pavement as dust is entrapped and incorporated below the evolving pavement. That is, soils and the pavements are co-evolving. The soils don't form only after the pavement forms, or as we think of these, as Oliver Chadwick calls them, as born-again pavements, when he gave a talk on pavements and came up with that. What is the main source of dust that is driving the accretion of these soils? Well, B.L. Allen and Lee Guile and John Hawley's research have shown that dust plays an important role in the genesis of desert soils. But what our research shows is not only is dust incorporating in these soils, but it's also driving essentially accretionary soil development. The types of evidence supporting inflation in desert soil formation are relatively robust, as described by a number of different lines of evidence. But it took over two decades for this research ultimately to be presented as an alternative to desert pavement development in many geology textbooks. Finally, the first time we ever saw our model presented as opposed to the older model, or the deflationary model, was in a textbook published by Press and Siever. Well, they got the accretion part right, but they screwed up on the formation or the evolution of the desert pavement itself. You notice that the class size in the pavement remains constant in their little box model diagram. Our studies of desert pavement show that they actually evolve quite differently than how most people thought. Most people thought it was generally generated by salt weathering, but our model suggests that, in fact, most physical weathering in desert pavements occurs as a result of non-uniform solar insulation heating of rocks that generates fractures in physical weathering, and our model would predict that many cracks in rocks would be preferentially oriented, and our studies throughout many deserts in the United States and on other continents show that, in fact, these fractures are preferentially oriented, demonstrating that solar weathering is probably the key way in which fractures are initiated on most desert pavements, having an important role on soil-forming processes. So which conceptual model for soil development should we use? So I'd like to very quickly go through two studies that we've conducted in semi-arid areas of the Southwest to provide some insights and answers to that question. The first site I'll take you to is located on the Colorado Plateau in northeast Arizona. These are soil and vegetation mantle slopes that seem to form preferentially on certain kinds of sandstones cemented by clay that are spatially extensive throughout the Colorado Plateau that resemble quite closely hill slopes that have been modeled by soil production. Now, one of the things I want to point out is that if you look at these landscapes, you'll notice these vegetated soil mantled slopes here, but they are juxtaposed directly in the same bedrock parent material with bedrock-dominated steep slopes. And so the question that you should all be asking is, who cares? And the reason why this is interesting is that these two types of slopes represent the two fundamental end-member hill slope types proposed by Gilbert way back in the 19th century, with the soil-mantled slopes forming under what he called transport-limited conditions, where weathering under more humid conditions exceeded the rate at which transport processes could remove them on slopes, whereas at lower altitudes and more arid climates, bedrock-dominated slopes or detached and limited slopes dominated when weathering was insufficient to produce enough material to produce a soil-mounted slope, and so you have retreating bedrock-dominated slopes. In the area I just showed you, you have these two end members absolutely juxtaposed. What can this mean? What does this signify? Well, first off, our research shows that the principal way or the principal means by which the soil mantles form on the vegetated slopes are through hydration expansion of the clay cement, which produces weakly developed soils that actually allow the recruitment of those soils by a vegetation mantle. Nevertheless, what we see is on the north-facing slopes is where these types of soils predominate, whereas on the more xeric south-facing slopes, we see the bedrock-dominated detachment limited soils or slopes. Research by Ben Burnett, Grant Meyer, myself show that what is most strongly controlling these aspect-related differences are insolation. Insolation differences produce soil moisture, where more soil moisture persists in the north-facing mesic slopes. Less soil moisture persists on the xeric slopes, and these produce these entirely different members, or hill slope end members. So on the north-facing aspect, we have continuous soil mantle, penyons and more vegetation, transport-limited slopes. South aspects are bedrock-dominated, few trees, detached and limited. The question is, are these slopes being transformed to one another as a result of climate change? I hypothesize that we should look in the transitional areas, the regions of pronounced environmental gradients that biologists refer to as ecotones. And the question, the more specific question we ask is, are these ecotones and associated soil and slope forming processes changing in results in response to climate change? This is research by one of my graduate students, Leah Roberts. We picked two small sub-basins that exhibited continuously changing slope aspects from south to north, and we used ground-based LIDAR technology to produce high-resolution DEMs to support our research. Here is a result of a topo sequence study on the north-facing transport-limited slopes, which basically show continuous soil profile in contrast to soil production prediction. The profile thickness actually increases downslope into downslope positions as a result of the formation of cumulic desert soils. We also observed that there's a systematic change in the soil thickness as one moves from the more mesic northern slopes to the more xeric south-facing slopes through the transitional region. Patterns of plant recruitment and persistence on these slopes strongly correlate with these spatial soil patterns. We observed that the oldest trees consistently live on the northern slopes, whereas in the transitional regions we see fewer and fewer old trees, typically mostly young trees. The recruitment patterns also reflect that, with increasing difficulty of recruiting the more xeric ecotones and the south-facing slopes. So what we think we're seeing are vegetation cover and soil development feedback loops, with less bare bedrock on the northern aspects favoring more infiltration, more weathering, which in turn favors more vegetation completing that feedback loop. And on the south-facing slope, less infiltration, et cetera, less weathering, more bedrock. What's happening in the ecotones? The ecotones are dynamic. We think the abiotic changes are causing the ecotones to shift. Typically, biological constraints stabilize them. But in our area, the abiotic changes are literally causing loss of the soils and conversion of those soils to transport-limited systems. The observed biotic changes, less herbaceous cover, less tree cover, et cetera, are destabilizing soil mantle, and we believe the soil mantle loss is irreversible. So we think these are dynamic slopes and ecotones, which are primarily being driven or triggered by large runoff events, which are increasing erosion, removing the soil mantle, concentrating runoff, exposing roots of long-lived plants like cliff rose. These areas are now difficult to recruit, and we see the final conversion of these slopes. Our interpolated thicknesses of soils across these basins show collapse of the transport-limited slopes as these areas are being converted to detachment-limited slopes by ongoing climate change. And so we think there is active transformation going on in this area, and although soil production may partly explain what we see in the transport-limited slopes, emergence of non-steady state conditions is producing detachment-limited slopes and causing the loss of slopes and a failure, really, the soil production model to predict this. The soil mantle slopes of the Sandia Mountains are also vegetated and soil covered by a soil mantle, also resemble slopes that have been described by the soil production function. We've described two topo sequences on the predominant slope in the area, which is cornerstone slopes, to compare them with the soil mantled slopes that we call the aplite slope, because aplite bedrock covers the granite that occurs on the transport-limited slopes. The upper back slope of the core stone slopes. In fact, the core stone slopes typically have very thin AC profiles where you can even find soils. But on the transport limited slopes associated with the aplite slope, we see incredibly thick, reddened, clay-rich argillic horizons. Several lines of evidence indicate that alluvial clay is primarily of Aeolian origin. It does not represent in-situ petogenesis. The aplite is very little weathered, and other lines of evidence such as bulk chemistry, optical thermoluminescence studies, soil mineralogy, and carbonate content also support this. And so we think the aplite soil, that soils form because aplite is chemically resistant to weathering, or is resistant to chemical weathering. It physically weathers to block eclubium, which is essentially entrapping dust. And so what we're really seeing here is accretionary soil pavement on a slope. And so in summary, in the Sandia mountain slopes, the accumulation of fines and limited runoff prevents the attainment of steady state balance between soil production and downslope transport. In the Colorado Plateau slopes, climate changes are causing a reversible transformation of soil mantled slopes to detached limited slopes, disrupting essentially quasi steady state balance between soil production and slope transport. And in our opinion, essentially, the application of soil production function and soil production concepts will really be, I would say it'd be a limited tool in trying to understand what's going to happen as we face global warming in the 21st century. Thank you.